this is designed to be a summary overview of Bishop Lockwood issues to tie to some of the popular questions that have come up. And I wanted to start by talking about how you explain Bishop Lockwood to people in general. Because it's, you know, it's always interesting when you try to explain to somebody that food that is of ingredients that are kosher, that is cooked in kalim that are kosher, under the supervision of a mashgiach, might still not be kosher. You're familiar with the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that starts this off, and the Gemara actually entertains the idea that it's a deoraisa. If you take a look at source Aleph, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Menai, really, how do you know that Bishul Hakum is indeed off-limits? The Mishnah in Avodah Zarah Dal Chavtes had listed it among the items that are Aser Ba'achila Mutar Ba'hana, that you can't eat, but you're allowed to benefit from. So how do you know that it's Aser? So Amar Chia Barabah, Amar Yochanan, Amar Kroa Tzapasuk. Ochel b'kesef hashbireini v'achalti, yumayim b'kesef titeli v'shasisi. Is the pasuk bless you, in which this is talking about the message the Jews send to Sihon, and they say to Sihon, sell me food for money, and I will eat it. Sell me water, and I will drink it. So, what does that pasuk have to do with anything? So the Gemara says that the food is like the water. Water doesn't change. There's nothing they could have done to process it that would have made it different. So too, the only food we were going to take from them was food that had not changed. Interestingly, the Yerushalmi notes that earlier in the same parak, we have a pasuk where they say that to Esav and uses that pasuk. I don't know why the Bavli brings the pasuk with Sichon. I haven't seen anybody explain that.
It's also funny that they commute the church all together, because the first half of the pasuk is Ochel b'kesef hashbireini.
Right, well no, he's saying that it's true, but only Ochel that is like mine.
Right, okay.
That's the idea. So, but the Gemara says, Elameyat achitin v'asan koyos hachin amida asur, and if it's really only food that hasn't changed, then that means the Bishul Hakum rules would apply to grain that you caramelized, where you singe it in the oven, and we say that's not true. V'chitei mahachanami, if you are going to tell me that, yes, that's also under Bishul Hakum, v'atanya chitei mahachan kleos mutarin. We learn that it's not so. If they take wheat kernels and they burn them in the ovens that they caramelize, that actually is mutar. Ela kemayim. Rather, the ochel tamayim connection is that ma'mayim shalom nishtanam ibriyasanam ochel shalom nishtanam ibriyaso. Just like water, that they're going to provide has not been changed from its form. When we say briyasan, we mean from its initial form. So too, food that hasn't changed from its initial form, the wheat that's been caramelized has altered, but its form is still substantively the same. Elameata, to which they then ask, v'chitin v'tachnan hachinamida utchanan hachinamida asurin, then if they ground up the wheat kernels, they lose their form. That's Bishul Hakum? Is that really true? V'chitin mahachinami, and if you'll say yes, v'atanya chitin v'asan klayos hakamachin v'aslasa shalem utarin, we know that if they grind it up and make flour, it's mutar. Ela kemayim ma'mayim shalonishtanu mibriyasan ha'yidei ha'ur ha'ocha shalonishtanu mibriyasan ha'yidei ha'ur. So they introduce the fire element and say, water that hasn't been changed from an initial form via fire, we're going to take from you, and food that hasn't been changed from its initial form via fire. I underline that because we're going to come back to the fire point in a little bit on some of the lemaisa questions that come up with Bishul Hakum. But the Gemara says, maybe it works, save the pasuk, didn't say anything about fire. Elami derabbanan. You're right. Bishul Hakum is a derabbanan. Ukra asmachta be'alma. The pasuk is simply an asmachta. It's linked to it. But Tosfos makes an important point on this. If you take a look at source base, he said bashlakos manayim eli omer avedin tam. Demi divoy tamud the bishlakos ukasavra mid oraisahi shema gezera kadmonishi velo nigzera im hapas. He says, the fact that you could have a machlokas going on in the Gemara among prominent Amoraim about how to understand the Pasuk in order to read this as a De'oraisa tells you this must be a very, very old Gezerah. If it was a later Gezerah, they would know it was a De'rabbana. The fact that you could entertain the possibility that this came to us from a Pasuk tells us that this is very early. He also notes that it's much earlier than Pasuk. So that there's a Tosfos of Yehuda Mibirena in Source Gimel, where he asks the question of why it is that they did Bishul Hakum separately from Pasach, and why wasn't Pas included in Bishul? It's source Gimel. He says, "Makash Levenu Yaakov if he passed lo b'chal shlakos." Hey, shouldn't bread have been included within shlakos, which is the gzera for Bishul Hakum? They're both fundamentally the same prohibition. The concern for intermarriage is greater if you're dealing with cooked food than if you're dealing with bread. Why? Because you have to improve the food, you have to sweeten the food, there's much more of an investment in it. Bread is not the same concern, and therefore it wasn't until the students of Shammai and Hillel came along that that was so, and then he continues with the point we saw in Tosfos and Source Bays. You know that Shlakos is much older because they try to prove it's a Deoraisa. If it was one of the 18 Gezeros from Talmidei Shammai Behillel, then everybody would have known that it was a Derabbanan.
So then the fact that the Zemaranim are trying to figure out which Pasuk is means like that the Gezeros are so old that they're not even, they don't know the Pasuk of the Gezeros?
Yes, that is correct. So when we try to explain the Gezeros to people, so we talk about the issue of Chasmas, right, and Lotis Chatein Bam, and how important that is. But I think it's also important that we explain to people that this is part of a bigger picture even than the intermarriage concern, which is that when you look in Chumash, you're thinking about the Jewish people and their interaction with those around them is shaped by the stories that we have of times when Jews sat down with people who are not Jewish. So you go all the way back to Avram and Sarah and Paro, right? First encounter of Jews, so to speak, and Avram and Sarah are Jewish in the modern sense. But the first encounter is Avram and Sarah going down to Egypt and Avram saying to Sarah, you know, those people are immoral and corrupt and look what's going to happen, and sure enough, that's what happens. And then you have Dinah and Shechem, and then you have Yosef's instructions to the brothers regarding living in Goshen and not being among Mitzrayim. Every message that we are sent regarding Canaan from the very beginning of Canaan. The idea that living among the nations is never going to be good for us. So, aside from the intermarriage concern, it's a general statement that being a part of general society carries with it certain risks, and therefore we prefer to be on our own and to limit the interaction. As a result, the Rabbanan do come along and prohibit Bishul Akum. It's worth noting that even though everybody and his brother believes that the issue is intermarriage, there is this one Rashi in Source Dalet that's very strange. Rashi says in Avodah Zarah Lamechest, Midrabbanan Shaloya Yisrael Ragil Etzlo B'maychul B'mishtev Yachilenu Davar Tameh. The concern is that if you eat and drink with him, right, he's going to feed you something non-kosher. That's very odd. Even Rashi himself in Source Hay says that it's V'chul Mishum Chasas, that all those Gezeros are about about intermarriage. The Ahavichen. Question comes up. If this is really so serious, you're telling me that we're concerned about intermarriage and we're concerned about what's going to happen when Jews live among non-Jews and so on. How is it that we have the remarkably broad heterim like we have? We're going to talk about a Jew lighting the pilot, right? I lit the pilot in the stove or in the oven months ago, and the non-Jew can now cook for me, right, today. So why does that make any sense whatsoever?
So is that Rashi and Dalet saying, like, he's going to make a mistake, or it's going to be on purpose, or it's not
either way? Either way. Didn't say. No intent, I think, is necessary there. So how is this? How does any of this work? So two approaches. One approach is from Ramban. Ramban is talking specifically about the heter that where a Jew is the one who makes the food edible, even if a non-Jew started the cooking process, it's still okay. So Ramban says, the kevan v'gamar b'yad Yisrael, since the completion of the cooking is done by the Jew, leka karu v'dayta v'leka mishum chasnus. So the Jew won't be drawn in. In other words, your contribution is still substantive. That's the approach of Ramban. Even Mihiri has a similar idea.
He holds out a halacha? I was just saying.
Well, he does hold out a halacha. That if the Jew is going to make it edible, even if the non-Jew cooked it earlier, it's still going to be okay. We're going to see that. He's not discussing the pilot light discussion there. This is a specific comment that he makes in Avodah Zarah Lamed Ches. But the Rambam has a line which is much broader, and I think is fundamentally what this is about, in Source 9, Chas Machalos Asuros. He says, right? He's dealing with bread in context, but the same thing is going to apply to what we're talking about. If the non-Jew turns on the oven, and a Jew bakes, right? I mean, the Jew put the bread in. O shehidlik Yisrael va'afa akum, or vice versa. O shehidlik ha'akum va'afa ha'akum, but Yisrael v'ni'er ha'esh na'ak. All that you did was stir up the coals a little bit. O kavsho la'esh, or he tamped down the fire. Hold and ishtateh v'malechas ha'pas harei zo muteres. Because the Jew fundamentally participated in the work on the bread, that's good enough. Even if all he did was throw in a little piece of wood, that's good enough. Why? The whole point is just for you to recognize that their bread is off limits. It's psychological. It doesn't matter how little or how much I did. It's that I had a thought of, we're not the same as them. We have our own rules and our own society, and the two should not be too close to each other.
This is all said regarding Pasa.
Right, but the principle is the same for all the term of Chasnas related discussions.
Right. Is Vardar much more machmir?
Yes, when it comes to, well, he's bringing you Pas here. He's going to be more machmir when it comes to Bishul, don't worry. Okay, so that's just background. In terms of the rule itself, so we need to define what counts as Bishul and deal with some of the contemporary types of cooking. So we already saw back in the Gemara that we brought in the first source that we said Ur, right? That fire has to be involved. So take a look at this Rama in source Ches. Dag shemocha obit kochav. If a non-Jew salts fish, uperosha ashanan osha achechshir la'achila, or he smoked fruit to the point where they're now edible. Harei elu mutarim, the Shulchan Aruch says. It is mutar. The maloach eno kirosayach b'gzeresu. As far as this gzeres is concerned, we do not compare salting with boiling something, but hamushan eno kimabushal, and smoking something is not the same thing as cooking it. The Rama writes gam kavush eno kimabushal. He says pickling is the same thing. It's not like cooking for this purpose. The lo asru ela bishul shel esh. The prohibition is only if you cook it on the fire. So right off the bat, I have to tell you that it's not only fire according to the OU and the COR. The OU and the COR also talk about iroi kli rishon. Right? Let's say I have something that I'm going to cook by pouring hot water from a kettle. So they say that's called bishul akum. So the case they give is couscous. Let's say you have couscous, and the way that you cook the couscous is you pour water from a kettle. They hold that that's a bishul akum problem.
Tradition
soup will be a problem for a different reason, right? It's not olal shulchan malach.
Right, and it's probably a few kids also eat it.
Yeah, all the time. So. Well,
it's pickup to a certain extent. Yeah. Right. But the couscous is the case.
Is that just based on the Gemara, this irregularization, or based on the fact that it's somewhere between?
I think they consider close enough to Ayyidei Ha'esh because the water was heated on the fire.
What are microwaves?
So that's my next one, is the microwave question. So the Rama seems to say it's only fire, and in fact, the Starkei, quoting Rav Heineman, says that, yeah, microwave is not a problem. Chagas bin Yamin, also in Kuf Yud Gimel, Kuf Chavav, says the same thing. However, others disagree and say that I don't care whether it's fire or not. Fire was the way they cooked in the days of the Rama. But whatever is the normal way of cooking is a problem. So that's Rav Yashi's position. It's also the position of the Shavuz Yitzchak, which I must admit I saw quoted, I didn't actually open it up. But it's the Shavuz Yitzchak, Chelik Vav, page Nun Ches. And it's also the Shevet Halevi, which I did bring you here in source Ches. He writes, U'b'tshuvas davar zeh omar. To answer this, I will say the following. Ki davar pashut, ki davar zeh osim mishum bishulei akum. He says, of course my grave is bishul akum. Ki bein latam ha'gzera mishum chasnus. If the concern is marriage, if I want to take that concern for non-kosher food, and if you want to take the halavim to the Gemara that it's a deoraisa from the comment with Sichon, I don't even know why he's introducing that, because it is rejected. Nonetheless, kol zeh shayach b'gishul zeh denikra gal. All of them relate to the microwave. De'ilu haya iser maleches bishul. Haya aleinu lachkor b'tiv pe'ulas maleches bishul shemikro gal sharam shav ein lanu esik bazeh. He says, if the iser was the malach of bishul, no, it's like Shabbos, right? It was a helpful Shabbos question. So then you're right. Then we would have to ask ourselves, so how does bishul work and how does microwave work? You know, fine. Aval ha'isa gzeira ha'gzeira bishul goy mishum chasnus. But the concern is intermarriage. For gazul he nazar mayhem lihisrachek mi bishul mayhem asher bishul ha'seuda mege lidei his karibus. K'mosh kasva rishonim, he says the point was simply that if you eat the food that they cook, you are going to draw closer to them. That was it. In Kate, Ma'ir Pas Tsuraz Ve'echus Habishul, Kolshin is Bashal Ve'ucham the Su'uda Ba'ofen Haragil Ve'tkufa Zos. So he says, why do I care how it got cooked? Right? Bottom line is, that's why people make meals. Ve'ucham Ma'achal Zeh, Ve'tor is Bashal. It's, you know, people call this cooked food. He, Agdera Shigazu Chazal, therefore that is what is included within the Gzera. So his view, and Rabbi Yasha's view, is that it's Asher. The Minchas Asher in Devarim Vav says he can be Megel for a Cholet. The Eretz Chemda, did I bring the link? I thought I had the link here, but I see I don't. But Eretz Chemda has an answer on their site saying, you permit it. They don't seem so happy. But what you have is a standard issue, Machlokes Achronim, about how to handle this.
And there's not really too much Darshina time at the Gzeira, but what was the reason that what Mishum Chasnus? Isn't it because like they're putting effort and they're actually cooking it? And it's not.
Yes.
Gzeira wants to work together. Right, so maybe you say for throwing into a microwave, does that work? Like, do you feel any sort of better?
That's an interesting question.
Why? Again, there might be too much.
Why is it working for it? Because
Gzeira wasn't for me and you to eat a meal together. Like, you can have an apple over to your cap. Well, again, I understand why you're saying this, but I'm saying only me because if somebody cooks you a nice meal, you know.
Right, I mean, your point is the same point that Tosfos Rabbeinu Mivirena made, right? When he explained why they didn't initially include bread, he said, because you do much more to improve cooked food than you do for bread. Bread, realistically, you can just mix together flour and water, you know, right. Putting your starter in as bread.
You could say that was bread too, also, though. If you're already looking at the psychology, then what the Rambam saying is just being out. To remember, then I could see someone being machmir in microwaves in Vishalakum, but not machmir for Vishal Shabbos.
Yes. Even someone who would permit it on Shabbos it's a problem for me.
I hear that. Whatever, say, like, yes. It's not, like, we're actually chumra, Vishal for Vishal kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, separate the categories, because here you still want to be machmir in Vishalakum to remember.
Right. I mean, his point about not using the Shabbos standard, I think, is well taken. There's no reason for me to do that. In the same way that we said don't use the Maliach Hiroteach or Kavashim the Bushel standard.
Right. The same thing that comes up with Bishul and Basra Mokhol. Is that the same as Shach? Meaning the different categories.
Correct. Correct. And one thing that I like to emphasize when I talk to people about this, I should have put it in the opening part, is for people to understand just how important this really is. Meaning, the number one reason for intermarriage in our day has nothing to do with rejecting Judaism. It has everything to do with the fact that I can travel in society, take classes with people, meet them on public transportation, and recognize that non-Jews are nice people too. That's really what it comes down to. And unless I have some particular value of, I want to create a nice Jewish home, and with somebody who values nice Jewish things, there's really no reason why I couldn't fall in love with my next-door neighbor. So eating together is a prime way for me to meet them and discover that they're good people too. And that's really what this, so to speak, boils down to, if I may be forgiven the pun. Another question that comes up, although I think in practice it's pretty rare, but I'll mention it anyway, is the problem of unintentional cooking. The case in which it could come up commercially, although it shouldn't, in which case there's a commercial oven, right? And they decide they're going to put their sandwich in to warm it up for lunch for themselves. And there's actually product sitting in the back of the oven that they don't notice because these commercial ovens can be huge. Or, let's say you have a housekeeper over at your house, and she's cleaning the stovetop, and she's cleaning the oven, and she hits the control by accident, and it actually cooks the stuff that you had left in the oven. It was a Friday, you put the challah in there to rise, and you were planning on baking it, and she actually ended up turning it on. It's a little far-fetched in practice. But the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Lamed Ches discusses this case of unintentional cooking. They talk about someone who lights a fire in a field, and then ends up cooking all the grasshoppers that are in the field. And the upshot of the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lamed Ches is that if their intent was to cook something, then even if they weren't intending to cook your food is no good. So in the case that I gave where they put their sandwich in, any other food in that oven is now subject to Bishul Akum. If the intent was not for cooking, so they turned it on by accident, or they turned on the oven to heat the room, they had a wood stove or whatever it was and they wanted to heat the room, then your food is fine. Another standard question that comes up, or that should come up if people would ask it more, is Bishul Akum somehow allowed for children? can I feed my children bishulakim? And the answer, of course, is no. But people sometimes have this idea in their head that it's okay. Take a look at Source Yud, where the Rambam writes explicitly, Karen sha'achalachim machalos asuros, if a minor eats prohibited food, or sha'asa malacha b'shabbos, or he does malacha on Shabbos, ain based in mitzuvan alav lahafrishol, v'sheno ben das. So assuming he's, you know, under the age of chinuch. So Basin has no obligation to stop him. That's if he does it on his own. You may not feed him stuff actively, even if it's only a derabanan. And you may not accustom him to break Shabbos or Yom Tov. This is a big problem with people who regularly use children when they run into a problem on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Can you turn on the light? Can you, you know, open the fridge or whatever? All the different things that can come up. They run afoul of this Rambam. The Aruch HaShulchan is quite a bit on this in Hilchos Shabbos as well. But yes, the answer is children can't. The other question that comes up a lot is the status of Kalim afterwards. Right? People who have the nannies, and I have inveighed against nannies in other circumstances. I don't need to go on at length about it now. But they have the nanny in the kitchen. And the nanny, innocently, cooked food for herself. She said, I'm not bringing any ingredients, I'm not doing anything wrong, I was really hungry, so I chose to heat up soup or pasta or whatever it was, just for myself to eat. And I was observant, I watched, I used the milk stuff with the milk, I used the meat stuff with the meat. That's great. However, your kelim have now been used for bishulam. So the Rashba writes in Avodah Zarah L'Mechesem and Aleph, then it needs kashering. And Source Yud Aleph, you see the machlok is brought on the Shulchan Aruch. Sorry?
This is my shiloh about that donkey. We spoke about this earlier in the year. This thing that had this bad had all you, but it was a mistake.
Yeah, right.
But I still don't answer someone. Think of that.
If we saw that they cooked something that was subject to bishulakum, tzvichim hechsher, it requires kashering. And some say, no, it doesn't require kashering. He does say you can rely on the bala yitr. And you kasher klicheres by doing a triple hagala, as we've discussed on other occasions.
This is a case where, like, stomach is shown, you have to follow the stomach, or it's like not as clear.
So I'll tell you only what we say. The Tzitz Eliezer tries to explain the machlokes based on the two views about why it's usur. Meaning, if your concern is lest he feed you trig, then maybe we actually view it as trig, in which case you would require kasher. As opposed to if it's an intermarriage concern, then he'll be more makel. That's the Tzitz Eliezer. And since we paskin that it's an intermarriage concern, therefore you would have him to be makel. The Tzitz Eliezer is chaf beis mem dalet. The Aruch HaShulchan disagrees. The Aruch HaShulchan in Yeridei Kuf Yud Gimel Nun says indeed that kashering is required. That's his position. So far so good?
So what do you tell people on my side?
I tell people if it's not going to be a huge burden, I for sure tell them to kasher. You know, if there's some particular circumstance or whatever, then maybe there's something to discuss. But I would want them to kasher. Kashering is not an expensive and difficult process, Bisman has that. It's just annoying.
Okay, so there's like plates. How far does it go?
Well, he's been makil already for klicheres to do hagalah gimel pamim. So what are you going to be unable to kasher at this point? For sure, we'll be makil for plastic. You know, I mean, what's our problem going to be?
Right. Yeah,
so it's annoying to do.
In my scenario, you want to be makeup, perhaps, because the thing was different. I didn't know if it was bishulakum.
Right. Remember that I haven't seen anyone who adequately, at least to my satisfaction, explained the way the Shulchan Aruch language works there. He says it was done in front of us. I don't know if that means he wants to avoid suffix, because if it's suffix, then you don't need to. I'm not clear on what that language is.
In suffix, you mean if it's in front of us, we know they cooked it, or if it's in front of us, then we know they for sure didn't use.
Right, so I don't know. I don't know what to do with that word. Yeah.
Like, why'd you let it happen? It was right in front of you.
Okay, so we have three exceptions to the rules of bishulakum. The first exception, the one that's the most complicated, is where the Jew brings it to edibility. And that's based on the Gemara Avodah Zarah L'Mechesed Aleph. That's where this leniency is discussed. And in fact, that's where Rula Halacha. So that the Rush says, did I bring the Rush on the sheet? No, in the end I did not. But the Rush says in Avodah Zarah Beis Lamed Beis that we are lenient on both ways, meaning if a Jew brings it to Meichel ben Drusai, which is our standard for edibility, although we have to discuss one-third versus one-half, but if a Jew brings it to Meichel ben Drusai, it is kosher, or if a non-Jew brings it to Meichel ben Drusai and then the Jew completes it, it's kosher. So we're makil both ways. Here's an interesting question, though. When the Jew plays his role in it, and this goes back to that Rambam that we saw for other purposes before, when a Jew does cooking, does he have to touch the food in order to be said to have actually brought it along? And it's a machlokas Ashkenazim and Sfardim on this issue. If you take a look at source Yud Beis, the Shulchan Aruch on this, Einish Shigiras, and the parentheses there is in Ramah script, so to speak, Pirush Havara, he tells you that Shigiras Tanur is lighting the oven. So, Ein Shigiras HaTanur Mo Elas Elevipas. He says, lighting the oven only works for bread. Avo Bishar HaMathamis Bashlin, but other cooked foods, Ein Shigiras HaTanur Velo Hadlakas HaEish Mala Umorid. Lighting the fire is ineffective. Ela HaHanoch HaDavka is putting in the food. Leficha Harotza Levashal B'machvas B'tanur Shalove Kochavim. So, if someone wants to cook in a pot, in an oven of a non-Jew, the Jew has to put the food in the oven, or assuming kosher oven, that's not the point. But the Jew has to be the one who will put it in at a place where it will cook. So the Shulchan Aruch requires that you actually be involved in the cooking process, not just the heating process. The Ramah disagrees. He's a V'yesh Chokin. Some disagree. He says some disagree and say that just like for bread, as we saw in that Rambam, increasing the flame is good enough, so too for Bishul Akum, increasing the flame is good enough. And even if you didn't even know what you were doing, it counts. This is the big header. He says, some say that even if the Jew did nothing, he didn't put in a splinter, nothing. However, the non-Jew who lit the oven, he got the fire from a Jew's flame. This is what we call a pilot light. So I'm sure it's going to be permitted. So I'm going to come back to the pilot light in a minute or two. But that's the machlokas Ashkenazim and Sfardim. What if the food was cooked to edibility, but then lost its edibility? This happens all the time, right? You cook food and then it's dehydrated. Right, it was cooked at the factory, and then it was dehydrated, and you're going to add water. Or they cooked something, and they froze it and shifted, and then you're going to have to heat it up. So how do we look at that? So the Yad Ephraim comments on the Ramah. I wrote it in here. Take a look at Yud Gimel first, please. I had more to see on that. The Shach writes on this Chitui that the Ramah is willing to accept. He's commenting on this idea that chitui would be sufficient, and he says it has to be a real chitui, meaning raking the coals means that you do something to the fire such that it's actually going to speed up the cooking process. Fine. I have more here from this Friday, but I think we understand the basic machlokas. But the Yad Ephraim on the Ramah on Kufi Gimel Yud Beis says,
is this shopping more machlokas than Ramah?
Yes. I mean, he's explaining, but it ends up being more machlokas than what the Ramah sounded like.
Why, what's he adding?
That the chitui is not just that you rake the coals around, but it actually has to be something that's going to be effective in speeding up the cooking. In other words, if it would have cooked just as fast anyway, then the shock will not accept it.
You have to throw a toothpick in.
Correct. It is definitely more strict, yeah. And sources you give, you Yudal has thought that I bring are just more of this fighting position, but you're familiar with this already. But the Yad Ephraim on the Ramah, Kuf Yud Gimel Yud Beis, says that if the food that was cooked once and then lost its edibility requires actual re-cooking with heat, as opposed to just warming up, then new Bishul Yisrael is required. So in other words, in the event that it was frozen, but it's still edible, The meaning, you just have to warm it up, and then it'll be fine, thaw it out and warm it up, then you're fine. I think a hot dog may possibly fit that category. In other words, the hot dog is not frozen. Well, it is frozen. But the point is that they cooked it originally. You could technically eat the thing, you know, thaw it out and then eat it. If you were in high school, you might. You can warm it up. There's no cooking going on. So potentially, as long as it had, on the one hand, this is a chumra, which is also a kula. If the original cooking was Bishul Yisrael, then you can have a non-Jew do this heating up of the hot dog, and it's going to be fine. On the other hand, it'll be a chumra if the original cooking was Bishul Av.
But your point is not that the cooking is what you have. I mean, I guess something practically, if it ever has a hesher, that would never be Bishul Av.
I would think, because they're not going to be so many. Because of this concern, yeah, they're not going to be so much.
That is mine. Yeah.
They're not going to be so much. But even if you cook it yourself, it might not help.
Correct.
So then
they're not going to. Yeah.
So you think that's true?
I'm not guessing. I'm hoping that's only a guess.
I would expect that they're Bishul Yisrael in the plant. I mean, the other question is that they will
go for Sparta.
You go to the other question.
Yeah, assuming they are. Then what about for Sparta? They're probably not Bishul Yisrael for Sparta.
Why not? You mean that it is too, because it's too difficult to get to?
That's probably why. I don't know.
It's a good question. How do they do hot dogs?
Maybe I come out of this huge cover that all hot dogs are trade for spark.
Alright, I'm going to look into the hot dogs question, but I wonder if they'd actually dismiss you and say it's not Allah Shulchan Malach. But I can take a look. Wait a minute. Rebelsky makes this point also. I think it's Rebelsky that says that that a recooking, if you froze something, that doesn't mean it needs recooking. The original cooking is what we work with. So in terms of the pilot light, the Ramah indeed is giving us grounds for relying on the pilot light, because in the pilot light situation, the non-Jew turns on the oven is lighting it from your pilot light. One of the other questions, though, that I've been asked is, what about the timer? When I gave a shiur on cooking issues down south in someone's apartments for a group of women, so one of the women asked, I have to leave for work. I'm going to come back from work and I need to have dinner ready. So what if I leave all the food in the oven and I set it to go on via
She's not putting food in
the oven. No, the other way, right. Sorry. I'm leaving the oven on a timer. The non-Jew is going to put in the food. So does that work? So the Star case says it does not work. And I asked Rabbi Heber, and he said COR also won't accept it. If you take a look at the source of Hezayin, here's the Star case quote: can Bishul Yisrael be achieved by setting a timer that will ignite the oven at set intervals? And he says no, since the Yehudi does not perform direct lighting of the oven, it would not qualify for Bishul Yisrael. Even though we're willing to accept the pilot, that we will not accept. However,
if you put the food in the oven,
then there's no one involved. What's the outcome of
it? Even if you don't call it Bishul Yisrael, it's Bishul no one?
Yeah. Well, no, you put the food in the oven. It's Bishul Yisrael. That's the question. What if you put the food in the oven before the oven was off?
You still did it. That's not considered placing.
That's right. That's like putting the food in the fridge. It's a cold space.
I want to look into that.
Why is it putting it in a fridge? Because you did the hot dog.
There's no cooking yet. It's not part of the cooking process.
I don't know.
If you take the food out of the fridge and hand it to your nanny, and she does everything else, is that called part of the cooking process? It has to get out of the fridge.
No, I don't get it, but this is hot dog. You're putting it in the oven.
You're putting it in the oven. I want to look into this. I'm not sure of the answer.
Is that a low sham visual, even though it's just
not moving? That's where it's cooking.
It's not, it's a cold box.
I hear both sides. I want to look into it. It's a good question. What if the Jew lit the oven before and it stayed warm from the Jew's use of the oven? Clearly, this is only for Ashkenazim, because the Sephardim want you to handle the food. But let's say you had the oven on before, the oven is warm from your cooking, and now the non-Jew is going to turn it up. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lama Chesam Adbeis mentions this in discussing bread and Pas Yisrael. Let's say the food is going to need to be cooked at 350, right? So what I did was, I turned the oven on this morning and had it at a low temperature. 150, 200, whatever the lowest possible temperature is.
Yeah, everyone does this.
And then the non-Jew is just going to turn it up.
Yeah, everyone does this.
So that's the.
Isn't that better than a pilot line?
Is that better than the pilot
line? It's not the same fire.
The pilot line? No, because it's not the self-thin fire. In other words, them turning it up may actually cause the oven to turn on. Right? If you have an oven that heats to a certain temperature, and then it stays at that temperature and it won't go on until somebody comes along and elevates it. You know what I'm saying?
So that's different than if you have like a gas stove and it's on the it's on the smallest one and they just increase
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because there it's your flame. Here it could be off to on.
Well, so maybe this would be much better to do it when the light's on and it's heating anyways.
Yeah. So the Gemara mentions this regarding bread and pasty straw. I brought you a Tosfos in Source Yitzayim there. They are dealing with the issue of you raking the coals for the bread. And Tosva says, Mikula Shmaisin Mashma, the Bo'inin Sheheha Yisrael, Mekhari Habishul Ktsas. From our whole discussion, it sounds like the Jew has to somehow bring the cooking along. Umashanaku Lahashlach Kisim Latanur, the practice of putting a splinter in the oven, Somchan Amashiyesh Bidvarm Shabbein B'nei Babel B'nei Eretz Yisrael. He quotes some sefer that they had. I've seen it quoted in a couple of places. I have no information on what the sefer was, other than that it was on the differences between Babylonian and Israeli customs. Do you have something on this?
No, I remember it.
Yeah. He says, "Bekamar b'nei Babel mashlichin kisem l'tanur, u'b'nei Marav omim kisem zeh amalo mamorit." That the Babylonians will put the splinter in, and the Israelis will say, "What are you talking about? You didn't do anything." V'adonushachan achar b'nei Babel v'tamudam. Guess what? We follow the Babylonians. Satosis is okay with the splinter idea for Pas Akum. The Radva is there, which I brought you in the next source, is good with this. He says, Umiu Kasha, Masamku Shimashlichan Kise Babokir Batanur Lachalayam Kulo. He says, what's the basis for saying you can put the splinter into the oven in the morning, the oven stays on all day long, and we're going to rely on the splinter you threw in the oven in the morning, right? You know the Rabbi Yisrael Salanter story. They say Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to walk past the ovens. And he would throw in cigarette, splinter, different versions of this story, in order that everybody who had been eating from there all day long would be eating Pas Yisrael. So the, and Bishul Yisrael, according to the Ashkenazim. So he says, what are you talking about? Your splinter's gone. That's the whole day long now, it's off of your action. V'yesh lomar, you could say, Shatanum shalanu sha'ofen v'hem rabim eino mitzdanin kol ayom kulo. He says, you could say that our ovens do not cool off all day long. Elamosif eitzim v'chopam v'hamid chomo. They keep it going to maintain the current heat. Nimsa shebapam harishona shemashlach hakise nisayeya v'afiyas shal hayom kulo. It should be v'afiyos shal hayom kulo. So then, when you put in the splinter, you are aiding the cooking, the baking of all day. And since the whole point is just Hecker, like we saw in that Rambam, even though there's no Hecker in the Yisrael Salander case because he's the only one who knows, nonetheless, they'll rely on that to be lenient. So that it is you created the current temperature, and all they are doing is keeping it at that temperature. That's the idea. Now, we already saw the Shulchan Aruch was not going to accept this, obviously, for Bishul. This isn't going to be a part of the discussion. The Rama said that the Hecker does work for Bishul. And so, ostensibly, if I brought it up to a certain temperature, if I helped bring it up to a certain temperature, then it's going to be okay. Even though, I'm wondering, that's not the same thing, though, as the case that I gave you.
No.
Why?
Because the case that I gave you is where I made it a lower temperature.
150 and she made it 350.
Let's say you made it 350.
Yeah.
Let's say you turn it off now, and then an hour later, the nanny comes in and cooks something. But the oven's still hot. It still has some heat from when you were cooking it.
Turn it off.
Yeah.
Right, so that's... No, I think...
No, maybe that's helping.
I think that's going to be acceptable.
It's not going to work. I'm going to cook.
No,
the Star writes explicitly that works. That what you're describing is valid. I didn't bring it on here, but I brought the link way down at the bottom.
Basically, if you
no,
turn,
I did not.
If you turn the oven on,
I have to add that link.
And then off, she can turn it on?
Because you made the oven hot. I mean, so let's say now that when the nine comes in, so the oven, instead of being 0 degrees, is now, whatever, room temperature, is now 20 degrees hotter. So that is also contributing to the...
Yeah, no, and the survey does say that it works. The... I have to send you the link. It's the last one on the page, on the link that I'm going to send you. If an oven that was lit by Yehudi was subsequently turned off, but remained warm, they don't define warm, until being relit by an Akum, would the Bishul Yisrael status of this oven be nullified? And their answer is, as long as the oven remains warm, the Bishul Yisrael status remains intact.
So why? Is it because it helps?
Yeah. When you turn the oven on, right, it will get quicker to the temperature that you're at.
So what about the 150? So that should be the same thing as if you turn it 150 and she turns it up to 350.
No, because the...
It started off warm, so...
It started off warm. Maybe. I hear you.
Yeah, that should be okay.
And that doesn't sound like the Radbaz.
Right, it does not sound like the Radbaz's case anymore. The Radbaz's case is that helped bring it up to a particular level, and they're just maintaining it, not increasing it.
I just still don't really understand. Why does that help? Well, if you say the whole thing is about heaven,
you read the Radbaz. He says Enomi stunning kol hayom kulo. So Enomi stunning. It used to be that once you add in, it was 350 degrees. You throw in your pick, it's 351. Etching will never go below 351. I thought all the things that it never becomes cold because you keep on going it all day, right? Go back down to 300.
The result of this, though, in commercial kashrus is the glow plug. You've heard of the glow plug for Pas Yisrael?
No.
Okay, so this is important to know about. It's a machlokas, star K, and the OU. Take a look. I brought you the pieces from their public comments on it, but I actually went through this with the star K for a bakery we had in Allentown to make a Pas Yisrael. The star K says, how is Pas Yisrael achieved in a commercial gas oven? A gas oven that has a pilot light that burns continuously will produce Pas Yisrael products so long as the pilot is lit by AUD. Today, this suggestion is not so simple. In order to conserve energy and cost, the pilot light in new ovens works differently. It shuts off and relights with an electronic ignition device, which reignites the gas burners. Right? So that now you have a problem.
There's no such thing as a continuous...
There's no continuous pilot, correct.
So what? When does it go on and off?
When it's not in use, presumably, no?
You turn it off. Not a pilot light, isn't that just called an oven? Or just like a non-pilot light? Okay.
No, because you turn it on, maybe that needed to be at a low level, while you're going to be doing this, and then you turn it off entirely when you're not using it. I don't know. Naturally, if a Yehudi turned on the oven, and the oven remained warm as a result of the initial lighting, the oven remains Pas Yisrael compliant. However, once the oven is turned off, the Pas Yisrael status is canceled until the next time a Yehudi relights the oven. There are techniques to overcome this problem. For example, a Star K pita bakery ran a secondary gas line into the oven that remained lit, even when the main gas line was turned off. Okay, if you can do that. But other bakeries installed a glow plug or light bulb in the oven chamber, it's also called a cartridge heater, which create additional heat in the oven, and when the UV screws the bulb or glow plug in the socket, the requirement of Hashlachas Kisem is fulfilled. And what they actually do, they didn't mention this in this paragraph, but what they do is they have you install two. And the idea of installing two is that you install one, and then a month later or 6 weeks later, you install the second one. Because that way, when the first one burns out, you're assuming that there are no duds, so they have a certain lifespan. So when the first one burns out, you still have the second one that's going, and that way there will be no temptation for them to not report it when it goes out, and then they're going to keep on baking stuff. You follow? They'll let you know, and then you have a few weeks to replace the first one.
Well, is it one of those light bulbs that people put in the shower to keep the room hot?
It's stronger than that, and it doesn't look like that. But other than that, yes.
It's tiny or it's big?
Yeah, it's small. It's like a bar almost, like that extends out of the wall. And it's,
so it's just kind of that's continuously giving off a few degrees of heat, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than a few degrees.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the Star Case method. The OU isn't comfortable. Take a look at Chafala. Verbelsky has said that if a Jew turned on the fire or raised the temperature, even if the oven is subsequently turned off and turned back on by a non-Jew, like we talked about, the bread baked in the oven can still be considered Pas Yisrael as long as the oven did not cool down to below 176. That's his definition of warm.
That's hot.
Yes, it is. This is the approximate lowest temperature at which foods will still cook.
That makes sense.
Since the dough will eventually cook in this oven even without the Akum turning back on the fire, it is considered Pas Yisrael. The OU does not accept the use of a light bulb or glow plug in maintaining Pas Yisrael since this will not cause the oven to maintain 176.
The fact that your contribution has to actually, that's the Sfarim stuff. Not actually.
Why?
But actually cook. One toothpick doesn't actually cook anything.
Well, it's not that your contribution has to actually cook, but you have to really be turning on the oven. They're saying it's not turning on the oven.
But is one adding a toothpick actually turning on, doing anything?
And his argument is going to be, in the real toothpick case, you are helping bring it up to 176.
What if you walk by and it's 450 and you throw in a toothpick and it really stays at 450 because the toothpick doesn't do anything?
Then I think you have a problem.
But isn't that there a must end? Wait, if I didn't tell you when you have to throw in the toothpick? Or even if you stir the pot. You know, let's say the non-Jew does everything. They're making, you know, pasta and they do everything. And all you do is give one stir of the actual food. So even Sparta will say that's okay. Mm-hmm. But the stir doesn't do
as long as it's somehow Marav Yishula, I'm going to take that shot. Who talked about Chitui Begachalim and saying you have to do something that brings it forward, which is also in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah.
So according to the shot, the toothpick doesn't work. It has to be like a real log.
Yeah.
But let's say the shot, it goes from 450 to 460. But it would cook to 450 anyway.
Right, it'll cook faster at 460, that's okay. You're a Marav. And the splinter method is problematic. The glow plug method depends on material.
I'm just trying to make the Machlokas Star KOU into sources. I don't really see it. Like, is one remotion around the shot? Like, it's a nice thing to Machlokas in Kashrus agencies, but where are they saying it? Which source are they reading?
It's a fundamental. It sounds like, the way the OU puts it, it sounds like it's a Machlokas in what warm is. Right? The OU is saying it's got to be 176. The Star K is saying, no, it does not.
Warm in which source? Like, which makor are they disagreeing on?
What drives one to say 176 versus one not to?
This idea, like, is this the Shach they're fighting over? Do you accept the Shach?
No, I don't think so. It's an interesting question, though. What drives the Star K?
I mean, it would seem like the Star K is like the Ramak of Shuto, no? Throwing in anything is good enough. So, yeah, so any amount of your
Star K is ignoring the chef.
What's the OU based on?
The chef.
It's an interesting question.
But the chef never says that, you know, we can never go below the temperatures where it could, you know,
the only usable part is that your contribution has to actually help. It can't just be symbolic.
Right. I mean, the Shach is quoting the Yisuv HaHefter, and he says that Oso Chito Yoel Letaken Ha'esh V'Yoel Lemaher Bishulo Al Yidei Yisrael. This is wrong.
Does the Shach take it? The Shach has to take it out of the realm of symbolic into practical. The Rama is okay with symbolic. Mind or heck care.
It's an interesting idea.
And the Star Case seems to be going with that.
I'm still not sure that you can put that one in the shot.
So they'll use more makeup in the shot?
Maybe more mouth.
Why?
Well, where's the idea that it has to always maintain the temperature 176? Well,
because that was your contribution.
He's saying without that,
it's meaningful.
Without that, it's
like that Ravaz. Right? The Ravaz said they're maintaining the temperature all day long that you helped create.
So I'm trying to think, so if I make it up in 174 degrees, so why is that not meaningful? I mean,
because it doesn't cook.
Yeah, but all that has to do is put it up 2 degrees. That's what...
The only you're saying it needs to be able to cook without that.
If you have, whatever you're doing has to be able to cook at all time. No?
Technically, Mamahar Bishulo... If you say if you make it 5 degrees instead of 0, then it's going to get to 350 10 seconds faster.
Well, that's, yeah.
So really anything is Mamahar Bishulo. If you're starting from some degree of warm as opposed to freezing, or room, if you're starting at anything higher than room temperature, you're going to get there faster. So the getter of Mamahar Bishulo is fairly lenient to that.
All right, I'm going to have to pick up with this next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.